This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. In conjunction with Merdeka and Malaysia Days, we are featuring healthcare heroes, individuals and organizations on a mission to make healthcare accessible to marginalized communities across Malaysia. Today, we're highlighting REACH Sarawak, which stands for Rural Expeditions Assisting Community Health. Now, this is a team of mostly healthcare professionals who volunteer their time to provide healthcare services to rural communities in Northeast Sarawak who otherwise can't easily access healthcare. So on the show with me today is one of the co-founders of REACH Sarawak, Dr. Xavier Sim, to share more about his team and the work that his team has been doing in the almost 20 years since they started back in 2003. And hopefully we can also get Dr. Xavier to share more about why healthcare is only one of the many challenges that the communities they serve face. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Xavier.
Thanks for inviting me, Sue Ann.
Now, tell me, you know, why did you start REACH all the way, you know, back then in 2003? What sparked that idea for you?
A close friend, Wee Ek Peng from Kuching, approached me to start visiting Penan communities in Baram, in Sarawak, in November 2003, mm-hmm. to provide basic healthcare to these marginalized communities. Thanks to Peng and my late uncle, Sim Guang Yang, who was a member of parliament for Bandar Kuching, and Si Chi Hao, a lawyer, a land rights lawyer, currently state assembly representative for Batulintang in Kuching. All of us came to understand that many of these communities had defended their ancestral native communal rights land, mm-hmm. or NCR land, Tanah Adat, if you will, for decades. We wanted to show them some support and solidarity, an expression of universal concern, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What sort of, I guess, healthcare services did you start with, you know, did you start providing initially back then? What was it like then?
It was pretty basic at first. We started with four doctors, mm-hmm. and very limited medical supplies. We were worried. We were anxious, I can't lie. Being urbanites, you know, we had to take a four-wheel drive on very bumpy logging tracks for 8 hours, then a long boat ride for about 3 hours, then hiking for about an hour. And I got my foot stuck in quicksand once.
Oh, dear.
my friend, my doctor friend, Chu Kian Peng, pulled me out. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be here. The longboat engines that we used, they're modified from grass-cutting equipment. And the longboats themselves are only a couple of meters long. There's some rapids on the river, so we were quite worried about this.
Mm, so it was really just what was available then and you make do with that.
Yes, and that's still going strong now. I mean, we still have to travel long distances and we hike sometimes up to 3-4 hours to get to our destinations. We don't carry our own medical supplies and dental equipment. You can imagine that's quite heavy. Mm-hmm. The local communities help us.
Mm. So I guess then almost, you know, 20 years later, in terms of the logistics, would you say that a lot of it is still very similar to, you know, compared to when you first started?
Yeah, the logistics are still a major headache. The logging tracks haven't changed much, mm-hmm. in the last 20 years. We still use the same four-wheel drives. We still face the same risks on the logging tracks. It got frightening at times. Mm-hmm. On one trip to Middle Baram in 2010, our four-wheel drive got stuck. It stalled at the top of a hill near the crest of the hill. And on either side, there was a steep drop of about 30, 40 meters. So we started going backwards.
Oh, dear.
And it was zigzagging along the road. And I remember I was sitting outside in the bucket, in the open air, the rear left corner. And I thought we were going to die. I remember just before we went off the road, I started shouting, stop, stop, as if that was going to make any difference. There was a friend of mine, a Saban man from Long Banga, who had his legs over the edge of the bucket on, mm-hmm. the other side. He was about to jump. And later he told me he refused to jump because he saw the look on my face. And apparently the look was blur as he described it. So he couldn't bring himself to leave me. But at the last moment, as we were veering left, which is my side, mm-hmm. the rear left tire hit a mound of earth that was pushed aside by the diggers. It's about perhaps a meter tall, fairly compacted. And that stopped the left rear tire. Mm-hmm. And I was left looking over the edge at the treetops below. And all of us slowly got off. I got off on the other side, of course. And we kind of held hands in the middle of the road and said a prayer of thanks. But the amazing thing is the volunteers who were with me that day, almost all of us have gone back on repeated trips. So the logistics are scary, mm-hmm. But it's definitely worthwhile, which is why we keep going back. It's worthwhile work.
Mm. And hearing you talk about that, Dr. Xavier, to me, it's either you and your team make that trip or it's the people having to make that trip, right? It's either way, someone is going to have to go through those really rough terrains, take those dangerous routes to access healthcare services.
The secret is to improve communications, to improve those logging tracks so that we can reach those communities, not only us, but the Ministry of Health and other NGOs can reach mm-hmm. these communities more readily. Now, these communities have to face this kind of danger every single day. Mm-hmm. And there have been deaths on the logging roads, and there have been cars that have gone off into the ravines and so on. And they have no choice. I managed to get back to KL. I'm now in TTDI, mm-hmm. Comfortable. They have to face it every day.
Mm. So, you know, I do want to find out more about the communities that you're serving. But, you know, first tell me a bit about the team that that's behind Reach Sarawak. You know, I understand that from seeing some of the posts you've put up that it's made up of various healthcare professionals. I mean, not all of you are healthcare professionals as well. Tell me more about, you know, the team and you know, what else can you tell me?
Well, Mr. Wee Ek Peng is an architect by training. I'm a physician by training. We have excellent volunteers. We have a special needs dentist, Dr. Dasra Raj. He's one of a handful in the country, I think, who comes with us. We have emergency specialists, pediatric specialists, medical specialists, surgical specialists. We have emergency trained nursing sister, Christina Jong, mm-hmm. who's been on more than a dozen different trips. We have a great team and we have many repeat volunteers. And all the volunteers join for free. Some of them pay for their own flights. We don't provide any allowances. We just pay for the four-wheel drive and for petrol and for some of the flights. Mm. So the volunteers who do come with us have stuck with us through the last, I guess, 19 years. Mm-hmm. We've become fast friends, and we've become fast friends with the communities we visit as well because we do repeat visits.
On the show with me today is Dr. Xavier Sim, co-founder of Reach Sarawak, which stands for Rural Expeditions Assisting Community Health. And they are a group of volunteers who are mostly made up of healthcare professionals. They regularly visit rural communities in Northeast Sarawak, providing basic medical and dental services to these communities. So after the break, I'll be asking Dr. Xavier about the communities that they serve. So keep it here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Su Ann. In conjunction with Merdeka and Malaysia Days, we are featuring healthcare heroes here on the show, individuals and organisations on a mission to make healthcare accessible to marginalised communities across Malaysia. So on the show with me today is Dr. Xavier Sim, one of the co-founders of Reach Sarawak, a group of mostly healthcare professionals volunteering their time and services to provide medical and dental services to rural communities in Northeast Sarawak. Now, Dr. Xavier, before the break, you know, you were talking about your team, the people who make up these expeditions, you know, taking time and effort to provide healthcare services to these communities. But now let's turn to that, to the people that you serve, right? Tell me more about the communities and the places that your team has reached.
We go mostly to Northeastern Sarawak. So Baram, Lawas and Limbang. Baram is a big district south of Miri, which is the coastal oil town, the coastal city. It's the size of Perak. Mm. And there are around 20 government health clinics or Klinik Kesihatan providing free healthcare to the scattered communities that live there. There are perhaps 70,000 of them. But there's only one referral hospital, a tertiary hospital in Miri. And there's a smaller hospital in Marudi and in Limbang and in Lawas, but they're not specialist hospitals as such.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the people who need specialist care need to travel, sometimes for a couple of days, spend 1,000 ringgit, which is a lot of money for them to get to the towns. Even if they want to extract a tooth, it costs them over 1,000 ringgit and 2 or 3 days travelling.
Mm. So even though healthcare services at government clinics are free or at very low cost, they still have to fork out that money from their own pockets to get to the clinic in the first place, right?
Yes, I think the communications are an issue which is very easy for us to understand in Peninsula Malaysia because the roads are so good.
Mm-hmm.
And clinics and hospitals are so close together. So we've started doing medical clinics the first couple of trips.
Mm-hmm.
And during one of the trips, the local communities would pass us on the river in the boat or pass us on the path in the forest and they would say, "Bunke dok tun jipen tuai." And that means, is a dentist coming? And the doctor in me was, of course, I was thinking to myself, I'm a highly qualified doctor. I can save lives and I can make complicated diagnoses. I know lots of long words in Greek and Latin. Why do you need anyone else? After some time, we came to realize that having toothache for months on end and not being able to scrape enough money together to get to the dental clinics, even though the dentists may be free in the cities or the towns, was crushing pain.
Mm-hmm.
So we started taking dentists, dental nurses, dental surgical assistants, and that's now part of our core work. And it kind of helped me realize that we need to listen to what the communities are saying because I don't know what's best for them. Even though I pretend I do, I'm a doctor, that's what doctors do.
Mm-hmm.
But they know what's best for them and we have to listen to them. So these communities spoke to us and we listened. Now they're very close to us. They take us on the longboats, they pull us up the rapids, they carry our stuff, they put us up in their houses, they cook for us, they feed us. So we feel a bit more like guests rather than charity workers. Now these communities are mostly Penan.
Mm-hmm.
Penan number about 15,000 in the whole world, and most of them are in Sarawak. A generation or two ago, they were nomadic hunter gatherers.
Mm-hmm.
They used to roam in the forests in small groups, and they had a wonderful life because they're among the best hunters you'll ever come across. They love hunting, they're good at it, they lived well, they lived happy lives, and they lived long lives, up to 80, 90 years old in the forests. We also visit other Orang Ulu communities in these areas, including the Saban, who number fewer than 1,000 in the whole world, the Kenyah, the Kelabit, the Lunbawang, and others. We make it a point to go to those places that are further away and those places that value and defend their native customary rights land. So we enjoy visiting these areas, and the volunteers, as you can tell, keep going back.
And you've sort of developed a relationship with these communities, right? You're not just going in there providing, you know, whatever healthcare services that you want to provide, but instead providing services that they need.
Yes, and one of the unmet needs that we came across was patients who are found with life-threatening diseases or illnesses, but which don't qualify as an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you have a bad fracture or if you're bleeding out or if you have obstructed childbirth in one of the government clinics, during daytime, a helicopter can airlift you to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to arrange, but it can be done. What we did is we found patients who might have tuberculosis or cancer or heart disease, developmental abnormalities, and we would then persuade them to come out to the hospitals with us on the four-wheel drive, on the eight-hour drive. That gave them a lot more confidence because they reckoned that if they got to the hospital, they wouldn't be turned away and asked to come back in a month to the outpatient clinic. But with us, with them, they would be more likely to be admitted and investigated and so on. If I were left in the forest by myself, I would be terrified. Mm-hmm. And they feel the same way about being in an urban setting. It took a lot of convincing at first, but eventually, now most people know us and they're more willing to come out to the hospitals with us. We made a diagnosis of 5 different people with tuberculosis on one trip in 2019. One of them was pregnant with twins.
Wow.
We took them to the hospital and she delivered safely. She was treated well. A year plus later, we went to her village again because we make it a point to make repeat visits and took photos of her lovely twin boys. We actually see the results of what we're doing. What we are doing isn't as significant from a public health perspective as what the government does, mm-hmm. which is vaccinations, pregnant mother's care, early childhood care. Those are what improve infant mortality, childhood mortality, and maternal mortality. And Sarawak has made great leaps and advances in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
What we are doing is we're trying to build a relationship with the local communities and give them options to look for doctors or dentists without having to travel.
Mm. Now, I understand that Sarawak does have the flying doctor services service, right, which is part of the public health system. The government, through that service, provides basic health services to some communities at a fixed schedule. How do you see Reach Sarawak's role in relation to that? Because a lot of people here aren't really familiar with the idea of a flying doctor service as well.
I was on the flying doctor service as a young medical officer, and it's fun, but it's a bit risky.
Mm-hmm.
The area is quite mountainous, mm-hmm. and there have been crashes before. So those paramedics, those medical assistants and nurses who risk their lives every month on the FDS, the flying doctor service, I have to tip my hat to them. They do excellent work in taking in vaccines and replenishing blood pressure medicines, etc. They look at pregnant mothers, but they only spend a few hours in each village because they have to take off and go to the next one. They don't spend the night. We try and spend the night mm-hmm. in most of the villages we visit. We tend to have a little bit more time to make home visits, for example, for incapacitated elderly people, for example. And we talk to the patients and get them to go out to the hospitals with us. The FDS can't airlift patients. They just don't have space in the helicopter. They have to send another medevac heli to pick them up if there's an emergency. And as I said, if it's at night or if the weather is poor, then it becomes a major issue.
You know, now that you're based here in West Malaysia, right, Dr. Xavier, what role do you play with the team?
I'm elder statesman. I provide some leadership and fundraising. I try and raise awareness about the issues that the local communities face. Most of our volunteers are government health professionals. It makes it more difficult to publicize our work, and we are pretty low profile.
Mm-hmm.
We don't make a big song and dance about what we do. We've remained quite low key even after 20 years. I don't think we'll ever become a big project or spread our work all over Sarawak. But what we do, we can keep going and make it sustainable.
Mm.
And that, I think, is just as important as making a name for yourself.
Mm-hmm. So from what I've heard from you, these communities face a whole range of health issues, right? You have from the more basic ones, what people would see as more normal issues like toothaches or basic medical health checkup issues, to more serious issues that do need them to visit a tertiary hospital. How do all these issues affect the lives and livelihoods of the people within these communities beyond their physical health?
If you look at public health, then certainly clean water is the big one. There are a lot of foodborne infections or waterborne infections which can be avoided because most of these communities don't have treated water. They do have some gravity feed from a higher ground reservoir,
mm-hmm.
and that provides pipe water, but it's not the same as chlorine-treated water. The main health issues that we come across are those of poor communities, which is mostly infectious or communicable diseases. We have skin infections, ear infections, chest infections, gut infections from food or water, as well as tuberculosis. And we've even picked up one or two patients with Hansen's disease or leprosy and malaria. And the Ministry of Health has certainly has a project to eradicate Hansen's disease and leprosy, and we're trying to help them with that. These health conditions may seem pretty easy to treat, and they are, but when you can't get to a clinic, it makes life impossible. We went to a village called Long Beruang and met a 19-year-old boy who had cut his foot when he was chopping a coconut, and he had an infected wound. Mm-hmm. So he had walked 4 or 5 hours to the nearest clinic, Kesihatan. We're near the Indonesian border, by the way. He had walked 4 or 5 hours to get antibiotics, and they only had penicillin in stock. And his penicillin didn't work for this infection.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time we got there, he was sitting on the floor with his foot and leg looking like a balloon. And he was very sick. And he was hoping that a logging truck would pass through his village and take him back to the clinic. So we put him on our four-wheel drive, our 4x4, and we took him to the airstrip, gave him some antibiotics. And the next day we were leaving on the plane, we got him a ticket and took him to hospital, and he's fine. He survived, and his leg survived. So these are easily treatable conditions. Patients with ear infections in urban areas, they get treated, they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
In remote areas, you have a buildup of pus behind the middle ear. Eventually, it perforates or makes a hole in the eardrum. And you have many young people in their 20s and 30s who have hearing disabilities as a result. We have many children who have scabies because they contract that in boarding schools, in dormitories. A lot of these children have to go to boarding schools because their villages are quite sparsely populated and spaced quite far apart. These are easily treatable conditions, but you can imagine how hard it must be to concentrate in school when you're having an unbearable itch. It's actually called an itch mite, the insect.
Mm.
And they may also have anemia from malnutrition or from worms. And anemia makes it much harder to focus in school.
Mm-hmm. And all of this would affect their ability to focus in school, and then later if they want to find jobs or move around, that will all affect their various parts of their lives as well.
Yes, that's certainly true. I think a lot of Penan parents are keen for their children to get an education. They're keen for them to go to clinics when they to get their vaccinations and get treated when they're unwell. There is a receptiveness to the health and education efforts that we make in terms of the authorities. There is some problem with some of the local communities who have undocumented children.
Mm.
It's the same problem in Sabah and in parts of Peninsular Malaysia as well. And those poor children have very difficult access to schools and clinics.
Mm. So talk to me more about those barriers that they face, right? Because these barriers are related to socioeconomic status. It's not that they don't want to access healthcare, they simply cannot access healthcare.
Yes, I think one of the biggest factors is just poverty. And as I mentioned earlier, many of these communities were doing very well when their forests were intact.
Mm.
They treat it as a giant green supermarket without any checkout counters. Much more important than that, it's also a source of cultural stability or adat. It's a source of identity for them. It's their whole world. It's their whole lives. It means much more than just land. So in the last 20, 30 years, we've seen many of the forests being invaded mm-hmm. by logging companies and more recently oil palm companies. And this has been going on really since the late 80s. So when you have this taking over of their land, logging companies are very powerful. The logging conglomerates are very powerful. That takes away a lot of their place in the world. And also their food and their fish and the wild game may go missing if the waters are polluted, the trees are missing. It's harder to find forest products like rattan. It's harder to find medicines when they use herbal medicines. So their lives are heavily affected by what many mainstream politicians call development. But the profits from this so-called logging development don't stay in the rural areas. They are in Singapore or in KL or abroad. And this is an issue that hasn't gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And these local communities are poor because their land is being lost. The communications aspect, the logistics aspect, we can definitely do something about. We can improve the roads, but at the moment, the roads are maintained by the logging conglomerates, and they tend to maintain the roads that allow access to active logging areas. So other roads may not be very well maintained. It's difficult to explain the degree of despondency that you can see among the younger Orang Ulus. Mm-hmm. Many of them have left their villages and left their farms and gone to Miri or Sabah or KL to look for work because they don't seem to see much of a future where they are. So to address these socioeconomic issues, I think one of the most important things is we have to accept that they are socioeconomic issues and they do affect healthcare and affect lives.
Mm.
And there seems to be a lot of difficulty to accept these socioeconomic handicaps that face these communities.
Mm. If we look at it from a health perspective, from a public health perspective, we can't just, you know, make sure that they can access healthcare services if we don't address all these other barriers that are still there in the first place, right? Because they might be able to access healthcare services in certain instances, but not all instances if they have, you know, all these different barriers still affecting them. I guess, you know, in the years since, in the 19-odd years since REACH started, how much has changed, if at all, in terms of healthcare accessibility then, considering that a lot of the other factors have remained the same?
There have been some successes. The Long Lama Clinic, which is about 2 hours' drive or 2.5 hours' drive from Miri,
mm-hmm.
has been upgraded. They've had some excellent family medicine specialists there. We do have medical officers in some of the Klinik Kesehatan, which was a pipe dream when we started out 19 years ago. We know that the FDS is still going and still doing a good job. There have been instances where I'm sure you're familiar with this news that for a while the FDS was shut down. So we always face these issues of finding it difficult to highlight the troubles that they go through because they're people without much of a voice. I can't pretend to be their voice, mm-hmm. but at least I understand what, from a distance, what they go through. So I feel that we have seen some improvements, but essentially the logistics still remain the same as they were 19 years ago.
So, Dr. Xavier, you know, you mentioned that the work of REACH Sarawak is you guys look for the funds yourself, right? Tell me more about that. You know, how do you fund these expeditions? When it's like you mentioned, right? It's not cheap to conduct these expeditions.
Our costs are very low. We have zero administration costs. We raise our own funds from our own volunteers and from the public. And we've had fantastic support from sustainable support from the Tiam Lai Yen Foundation and from LDS Charities and from the Rotary Club of Kuching in the past. So most of our work now is self-funded, and we are able to continue for the foreseeable years to come.
Mm. And usually these funds, right, you mentioned that there's no admin cost. So what do these funds usually go into?
They all go into logistics. So the flights for volunteers, the flights to the small airstrips in the rural areas, which are about 45 minutes long usually, about mm-hmm. an hour. The four-wheel drive hiring is quite expensive. We buy petrol and propellers for those longboats that carry us to our destination, but we make it a point not to pay the boat drivers so that we work together as a partnership with the local communities.
Mm. What would you say has been the most valuable lesson either you or other members of your team have learned, I guess, from the work that you've done and from speaking to these people as well?
I think the first and most important thing is what you do every day, which is listen. I think listening to them is crucial. We try and adopt a more bottoms-up, grassroots-led approach to development than a top-down approach, which is common among many people in the state and federal governments. I think we try and be less paternalistic.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to plan according to what the real requirements are on the ground. I think solidarity is meaningful. I think charity is piecemeal and is limited. And I think giving out cash is probably poisonous to most relationships.
Mm. Most importantly, you want to be able to enable them to support themselves, right? Not just parachute in, you know, where you think that they're needed.
Well, definitely we have a sense of partnership with these communities. When we go, we behave like guests,
mm-hmm.
and we work together with them. I think that's partly why we've managed to sustain this for so long.
Mm. What drives you and other volunteers to go back again and again? Because like you say, right, a lot of the people in the team are repeat volunteers. What would you say have been the success of Reach Sarawak in the 19 years that you've been doing this?
I think we've definitely educated ourselves. We have improved some of the public health education. We've taken out toothbrushes and toothpaste, and we've tried to improve dental hygiene. We've done COVID education. We've done first aid education. We've got some links now with some of the village health representatives via WhatsApp, because a few of the villages have prepaid internet access. They buy a card and they can send text messages, which I find is very useful. They can ask us about medicines and sometimes even about getting patients to hospital. So the volunteers love it because it's a beautiful area of the world. Waking up in the morning and seeing the mists over the mountains is a real pleasure. The people are lovely. The people are very warm and welcoming. They're very gentle people, the Penan. They're very gentle and very shy. They welcome us. And that in itself is quite an achievement because Penan have traditionally not being very trusting of the outside world. And for good reason, because the outside world has invaded their forests and polluted their water.
Mm. What do you think people, I guess, from the outside world, especially for us, you know, for many of our listeners who are based here in Peninsular Malaysia, right? What do you think we don't understand enough when it comes to, you know, what rural communities go through?
I honestly think it's impossible even for me to understand, even though I've been going back for 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a lived experience that you can go through. And it's important for us to learn as much as we can about all Malaysians, because in my mind, all Malaysians are human beings. All of us have equal worth, equal value. And that's something that we need to educate ourselves on and to not just in Peninsular Malaysia, but in urban areas in Sabah and Sarawak as well, and to educate our younger generations on, because that's how we move forward.
Hmm. And to wrap up, Dr. Xavier, you know, of course, it's the time of the year when budget is coming up, budget 2023 is coming up. And of course, every year we say that there will never be enough money for healthcare. But I guess, you know, in this context, right, when we're talking about rural health, what would you like to see improved or prioritised to improve this situation that rural communities in Northeast Sarawak are facing?
There's a crying need for more hospitals and more clinics and more staff. I understand that the resources are limited,
mm-hmm.
but we also know that priorities are focused much less on these rural communities than on urban communities. In national politics and state politics, Sarawak politics, where ethnic politics dominates. My late uncle, Sun Guangyang, used to say, ethnic politics is the business of counting heads. And there are not many heads in Baram or in Lawas in Limbang. So they're not worth very much. We need to take a step back and look at how we assess human worth in our politics. Whether we need to reconsider ethnic politics and make it something that's relevant to every Malaysian, every Sarawakian, is something I would push for every generation.
And on that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Xavier.
Thanks.
I've been speaking to Dr. Xavier Sim, a co-founder of Reach Sarawak, about their work of providing medical and dental services to rural communities in Northeast Sarawak for our Healthcare Heroes series in conjunction with Merdeka and Malaysia Days. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.